ready. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative, Wheel of Bella Lost Souls podcast. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. This is episode 168. Got Ricky Addington and Chris Morgan.
None of us know what we're talking about tonight.
And Adam Abramowitz.
Is there a World Series of 40K?
It's called Warzone Atlanta.
Yeah, getting ready for it. Where the Titans meet. Thank y'all for joining me. This is in that what Adam was talking about. We're recording on the night the World Series is being played, Game 7. So we had a shorter crew tonight. So I brought in Ricky here. Hope you guys don't mind.
I'm going to let you all know if my nephew finds out that I skipped the last two innings of this game for this podcast, he's going to disown me. Just so y'all know that.
just let him know. I hope his team wins.
Don't jinx it, man. Just don't talk about it.
We're recording this on November the 2nd. Obviously, we dated ourselves with the sports broadcast. But Warzone Atlanta coming up on November 11th to the 13th. But we're going to have coverage on Facebook pages. Going to go live a few times with that. Going to stream out to YouTube and maybe some Twitch stuff as well. Be sure to post those links everywhere that you can see it. We also have a Warzone Atlanta Facebook page, but of course we'll be linking stuff off the Forge Narrative Facebook page also. Missions, I think he was up, posted, everything's ready to go. Going to have some great sponsors there, going to have vendors on site. It's going to be like a real convention. We're going to have stuff going down Friday night. It's all real.
I think the word you're looking for is bona fide.
Bona fide is a good word. I'm always excited for this event. I know this is only a second iteration of it, but this is a natural progression of the Forge Narrative seasonals, and it's going to be a fantastic time. And I think this year more than ever, any event I've ever been to, there's been so much flux in the game that I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of cool, varied list types here at this event, but you get that when you get this many people, 110 people, we sold it. That's maximum capacity, by the way. That wasn't like we had more space to fill and we didn't. We're going to be busting at the seams for the style of event that we're running with that number of people.
And gosh, we still got a not inconsequential wait list too. So,
well, we've churned through that. Remember, I said everybody get on the wait list because there's just gonna be a natural churn. So we're pretty much deep mm-hmm. into it. So if you haven't gotten on it already, do so now if you have any intention of coming. And then we've also got the Friday night events going down. We got the 30K Horus Heresy Combat Patrol, which I'm pretty excited about. The mission's going to be kind of cool. It's really hard to write missions, dynamic missions, for a 400-point game.
I would say so. How do you make it dynamic when you've only got three units, right?
Some armies will have more, but it could easily, could be less, really. So the missions that I've decided on, they're going to be play with a couple concepts that I used in and I kind of tested them out in that new player tournament that I ran a few weeks ago. But the first mission is going to be where there are two relics. And remember, you're playing on a 4x4 table. And if you move the relics closer to each other, you gain more points at the end of the game. So that's one of the concepts. The next mission is going to be something where the Emperor's Will, where with every model that you kill, you're able to move your opponent's Emperor's Will closer to you.
Oh, nice.
That sounds kind of fun. I mean, that motivates some middle of the table shenanigans. And I think it sets up for very Horus Heresy 30K-esque showdowns. And that's kind of what you want, right?
I think so. And then also it compensates for the fact 30 people. You're not going to have 5-10 units on the table to worry about control. You know, let's manipulate where these objectives are a little bit, maintain some of the core competencies of the game, but still make the missions playable.
I dig it. I seriously thought about bringing a list with my Sons of Horus and playing with your actual Horus model ball. That is almost finished.
Nah, I can't. Cannot wait to get him on the table. I got big plans for that guy.
Smaller game types, having those sort of nuanced mission mechanics where all the decisions that you're making matter more is a lot of fun. You have the brain space freed up to think more about those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I do want to have some epic showdown type stuff. And in the last mission, how do you keep a secret?
Tell everyone? I don't know.
You have to kill everyone else who knows the secret.
That was my next guess.
What was it? It takes three people to keep.
It wasn't mine.
Pretty sure that was actually in a Horus Heresy short story.
I believe so, and that's going to be the concept of the third mission, is that there will be two secret keepers on the field, one for each side, and you have to, of course, eliminate the other person. And if they happen, if one eliminates the other, kind of like, you know, if a warlord kills the other warlord, playing off of that concept.
Like, it's almost like mysterious objectives.
Well, it'll be known which one is the secret keeper, but okay, just fun things to do, because it's only be three rounds. Got some really great prizes though for this event too. Power play coming in with some gift certificates for this, and some other. We got secret weapon coming in with some stuff, and then the battle bags, the Battleworks guys coming in with a certificate for towards credit to one of their bags. So this is a heavily prized event. I love giving stuff away. I just love it. It's one of the highlights of organizing these things.
Well, getting stuff is one of the highlights of going to one of these things. So I am just as pumped about that as you are.
We're blessed to have all these prizes and the categories that we have. Because even in the main event, we're gonna break everybody up into brackets, groups. So day two, you're not only competing for the major ranks in the tournament, you're also competing towards being the best in your own bracket. And the brackets are determined by your performance on day one.
You were a big winner last year as well, right?
Wait, me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking about balls.
Didn't you win best sports last year?
I won a favorite opponent. So
that is that's a grand tournament winning category
that is,
here.
That is like in. The most humbling thing that has ever happened to me in my entire life.
Well, it was well deserved. I actually commented on earlier this week, and not to sidetrack too much, but. Variance Hammer's one of my favorite blogs, and he wrote, "Who are your 40K heroes?" And Ricky's number two on my list, because you're not going to get a bad game with Ricky. For those of you that haven't played against him, it doesn't matter if he's kicking your face in or if you're beating his face in. You're going to have
the
fun
latter.
Time.
Usually the latter.
But so where I was going with that, Ricky won best sports and I won best painted, and you know, those two usually aren't prized as high as battle points or overall, but in this event they absolutely were. And
I had to have help stuff away. Yeah,
yeah. We almost didn't fit. I had three other people in my car, and after the prize support, because everybody else won prizes too. I mean,
these are legitimate categories too. Like these are when I say the brackets that you're competing with, is that you still play, you know, matchups, the Swiss matchups throughout the course of the weekend, but you're competing against those other people that were set in that bracket. So it's like another level of competition within the event.
Well, just to speak on that, you know, Jared Lane, you know, one of my best friends in the world, every time we go to a tournament, I swear to God, he actually tries to get last place, and he gets legitimately pissed when he doesn't get last place, because when it was Fortune Editor Seasonal in Durham, or was it in Raleigh or Durham? It was in Durham, right?
It was in Durham.
Yeah, he misses out on a brand new fat mat by like 2 points or something, and this is your fault, because you all ran that and you gave out the last place some sweet prize support. And then ever since then, as soon as he loses his first game, he's like, you know what? No, I'm going the other way.
There's going to be some stiff competition this year.
Exactly. And last year, the nicest guy in the world. He came in last place and got some sweet prize support. But Jared ended up winning that very, very bottom bracket and came out of it with that limited edition Raven Guard Space Marine Codex. That thing was freaking sweet.
That
like,
was
if
donated
I got that,
by a listener. That, really? that codex was donated by a listener. That was so awesome.
Whoever that listener is, you're my hero. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, is you're winning the very bottom bracket out of 100 people, and you come away with something that I'd kill to give away to the grand prize winner. You know, I mean, that's great.
We're just thankfully through our partnerships with our sponsors and some local stores, and then just the kindness of people, of some of our listeners, to be a part of the event, we're able to really prize deep, and I'm excited about it. I know we talked a bunch about it, and this is the kind of thing that makes me really happy to do. So thanks for listening to us. But in line with this, but more of a topic of the actual podcast, I want to talk about how to maximize your tournament experience. Going to these things, especially if you haven't gone to many of them before, you maybe don't know a bunch of people there, or you're curious, or maybe even cautious to go to one of these things. You know, let's talk about how to make the most out of those experiences and to kind of get past that and really have a good time.
So for starters, before we get into like the social aspect of anything, bring a bottle of water with you and make sure you refill it at least once in between rounds. I try to refill mine. I try to put down at least two bottles of water a game because you're on your feet that much.
I think you're saying beer wrong.
No. Believe it or not. So, if you drink as much beer as I do at these events, you have to hydrate. But I think I might actually do about four bottles of water. So apologies to anybody that I do play, because I do leave and I run. I try and make it as quick as possible to refill those bottles of water. But bring some water, stay hydrated, bring some snacks too. I mean, we're going to have fantastic lunch at this event. You know, it's included in the ticket price, but stay hydrated, stay healthy. I mean, it is an athletic endeavor to be on your feet for 12 hours a day. So we don't want anybody like passing out from exhaustion or anything like that, or getting sick. You know, it's November. Bring some water, stay hydrated, top off the fluids, and now back to our regular scheduled programming.
Thanks for that PSA.
I'm gonna tell y'all a trick I learned in the Army. If you once you drink the Gatorade bottle, if you just keep it handy, you don't have to make that run to the bathroom.
That is not what we're going to encourage. Listen,
there are some ladies in attendance, and they're not definitely, do that. do not listen to Ricky right now. This is not the barracks, guys.
On topic, making the best out of the event. So let's say that you're coming at your first time and you don't know anybody, and there's the kind of, I guess, opinion that, you know, when you to get into a group or to find a group to kind of hang out with or talk to, that people are cliquish. And I can tell you that it isn't the case. Like, most people are open to talk to about their hobby to other people, and you already have that kind of common bond with folks that are there playing the same game you came to play.
Absolutely. And even if it's not hobby that you want to talk about, it's just, hey, where are you from? Where did you come in from today? Everybody there is willing to meet other people.
Good conversation starter is like, how'd you get that color blue? How'd you highlight that? What decal? Is that a decal? You know, right. Those are many things that you can talk about with folks.
And you don't even have to care, and you don't even have to mean it. That's the beauty of it. If you go in and you don't know who, you know, you want to make a friend and have somebody to talk to, I don't care if it's, you know, if it's like rattle can spray painted, dipped, and then, you know, the eyes aren't even, you know, completely colored in. I don't care. Find something about it, compliment it, and you just made a buddy. Because we all want that. We all want, you know, that affirmation. And as soon as you compliment somebody, your buddies, there you go. And now you're having a good time.
These are life tips, y'all, because this is the best sportsman on at least more than one occasion. So, listen.
I say that facetiously, but realistically, you're going to go in.
Strategy here, guys.
Yeah, it's a strategy. This is how you win.
So remember that guy last year when he talked about your army? He really hated it.
He didn't mean it. No, seriously, though. Like, you're gonna make friends. Like, you can't, if you go to Warzone Atlanta and don't make a friend, it's probably you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, there is a barrier. You know, there, even if the barrier is probably just perceived. Number one, you know, if you ever go anywhere that we're at, you know us, and just come say, hey, Tim, what's up?
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I remember the first tournament I went to and met Paul. Like, I went up and like my registration wasn't right, and when I told you my name, you're like, oh, Ricky Addicts. Yeah, we've talked. And I'm like, oh yeah, hey. And like, we were, you know, best buddies. So, you know, that's how you make friends. I made buddies with Adam because I complimented his towel. I didn't know that he was going to go and beat me in best painted that year, but that's fine. You know, I'm not mad.
Shut up. You've been holding that grudge for 3 years.
I'll never let it go. But yeah, I think the biggest thing to making friends at these events and having a good experience, though, is just take a genuine interest in other people and the hobby. And you have the common interest of 40K. When you go there, it doesn't matter if you know a single person there, because everyone there is there for the same reason as you. You don't have to be shy. You don't have to be bashful. You don't have to be cautious when you go in there, because everybody there is there for the same reason as you. Go in and have a freaking blast. And if you find that you can't do that, you go find one of us, and we'll take you under a little chicken wing, and we will start introducing you to everybody. And I promise you will have a friend by the time you leave Wars in Atlanta.
Hello, but these are tips for any tournament.
Any tournament.
Yeah, and the strange thing to me, though, like at Warzone last year, there were a lot of people that this was their first GT. Like, this was their first time leaving their home state to go play 40K, where they didn't know anybody. And there were a lot of them last year, and
that's
I expect there to be maybe more this year. And that's a big step for somebody to take. So if you are that person that's listening today and you're coming out, make sure you meet friends, because here's the thing about 40K friends, they're going to be 40K friends for life. I mean, the people that I met at Forge Narrative Seasonal 3 years ago, the people that I met at Scarab 4 years ago are some of my best friends today. And, you know, you'll take that with you as long as you want to. Real talk, life talk.
Absolutely. Paul, do you really want to just go down like some tips for, like, is that what we're trying to go over, is like some tips for actually like getting there and making sure we don't like hose ourselves from the get-go about
I want to
maximizing the event for ourselves,
maximizing the fun of the weekend itself. You know, right. I think there's most of these places are near a city. You know, sometimes we're on the outskirts for budget reasons and that kind of stuff. But there's going to be probably like a restaurant or a bar that you might want to check out. That's also a good thing. Plan it a little ahead of time. You know, when the last game is going to end, you know, it's going to be late. You're not going to have a lot of time. But being able to get out and do something is not always easy to do. But if you can plan ahead, why not try?
I tell you what, though, every time I go to Warzone, I end up getting caught up in everything to the point where I end up having time to go get something to eat, come back, and go right back to something. And gosh, when you go to Adepticon, you're lucky to find time to go out and have dinner.
Just the fatigue of the overall day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that people don't really prepare themselves for is how tired they're going to be. It's like, you know, I remember the first time I went to Nova Open, it's like, I'm going to do this. And Adepticon, it was the same thing. You plan everything out, and then you don't leave time in there to go hang out vendors.
But think about that restaurant we found, though, added to our experience.
Yup.
The overall experience absolutely. Of the weekend. We found that cool, you know.
It was pretty cool.
Biker burger joint.
It was good.
It was real good. Had a movie on, had a lot of heavy metal music going on, and a lot of good times. A very, very drunk Ricky.
I don't know what you talk about, but thank you.
He doesn't remember anything.
Ricky does not drink spirits.
No, like that was something that I look forward to at the end of the day of gaming. It's just like, even though you're there to have fun and play a game and do all that, there's still like almost a wind down period that you need after just filling your time with all of the goodness that is that. Sometimes you just want to kick back and chill with people.
And Chris, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know that's one of the beauties of the venue that we're at the DoubleTree in Atlanta, is that there's a large lobby foyer area with a bar and restaurant attached to it. And you know, at the end of the day Friday and at the end of the day Saturday, I mean, there were 40, 50 people out there just hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, mingling with that.
If you're going, make sure that you spend some time, because again, that's where friends are made, you know. So, and actually, I mean, it's where great list building ideas happen as well.
But I guess we can kind of round out the topic on just don't be afraid to be a part of whatever is going on. And so, if there's some you hear wind of things being planned out, or especially if they're like kind of open out their activities, like you know people are going to be hanging out, get out there and hang out, because you know, everybody's real happy to talk about stuff. And then, you know, once the drinks start flowing, everybody's really happy to start talking about stuff.
They're even happier. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, don't be afraid to just grab a pickup game. If you're, you know, Ooh. After the day's over and you want a pickup game, do it.
That's great.
Go try some of these other games out. There's all kinds of stuff to do. I mean, it's just, if there's something you want to do and nobody else is doing it, start something up, ask some people to do stuff. I mean, you'll find people are real agreeable to hang out and do stuff. Just make friends, invite them to stuff, and eventually somebody's going to take you up on it. I mean, I have 100 some people.
That, yeah. Even with like game stores, like if you want to play a certain format that other people in that you don't think is accepted in your area or whatever, just start doing it on game night, and then you know people may turn around.
We took the crazy, crazy, crazy step of running just a pure GW and GW FAQ tournament the other week, or just a month or two ago at this point. And now a couple other stores are doing it too. So it's almost like we get to play Warhammer again instead of, you know, the FAQ bloat that all these tournaments seem to be having these days. So
it's a mad world out there right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to sidetrack us, but that's really good. And I bet it was kind of refreshing.
Yeah, it was. And that just goes to show, you know, try something, put it out there, and somebody will do it. Go to a tournament, find something you want to do, ask somebody to play, somebody will play.
Absolutely.
Dragons! I say that because on the topic, when we were all at the restaurant, we were talking about the kind of music that we like, and I was explaining to Paul the kind of music that I like, and it started this joke where we would randomly, while we were playing, we would say, Dragons! Like when we roll hot, especially when it's like the baritone of Justin Troop, like calling out, Dragons! Yeah, it was awesome. It was funny. And those kind of memories were off the table, so... Keep that in mind, folks.
That was the night Chris Morgan and I became best buddies, because he did not mind me being way too close to him.
Close talker.
A close talker. Who knew? Didn't realize I was that close to the talker.
Not fall over.
You're a mensch. You know that? Great. Love it.
So can I change gears a minute?
Please. And, please do.
I want to cry on you guys' shoulder for a second. Hate painting drop pods.
It's the worst. Even,
I have drop pod anxiety right now.
Did you see Adam?
Have you been following my
no, see, he's going to tell. Here's feed. What he's going to say, Paul. He's going to say, "Have you followed my Facebook feed and seen my wonderfully painted drop pods in red?" Dude, nobody even wants to paint drop pods with a army painter perfect matching green spray can primer, and here you are dropping these 3 drop pods that look better than anything I've ever painted. Nobody wants to put drop pods together, and yours are art. So shut up.
First of all, it was 4 of them, Ricky.
Oh, I'm sorry. My eyes crossed when I saw drop pods and somebody actually, you know, putting that kind of work into them. I told you all, Paul, I told you ATC where I was like, not ATC, Adepticon, and I was like scrambling the night before trying to get everything painted, and I didn't get that bottom of my drop pod painted. And sure as I'll get out, the judge comes over and is looking at the models, literally picks up the one drop pod that I don't have the bottom of painted, turns it over, kind of shrugs his shoulders, and puts it back down.
That's funny.
That's why I hate drop pods.
It's actually funny. So I didn't realize how difficult. I mean, they're not difficult to paint. They're just very time consuming. They take easily 4 or 5 times as long as a rhino. I'd never painted a drop pod until last week. So they are a little time consuming if you want to do them right.
Now I'm looking at these pictures, Adam, and I'm looking at your drop pod, and the paint looks great. But my question for you is,
call him out on it.
What happened to the harnesses?
Oh, I knew it.
So that was actually a decision between the client and myself. I asked him.
Did it go somewhere?
Was that Adam code no. for, hey, I don't really want to paint these. I will give you $5 off this paint job if I don't have to do these harnesses.
That's not how the conversation went. That's not how the conversation went, actually. Because here's the thing, and my good friend John that I'm painting this army for, he's listening. I should have charged him at least twice as much for these. So he's getting a banging deal for what I did for these drop pods. But I'd be happy to do the harnesses. I mean, in all actuality, they'd be the way that I paint them. And we talked about that a little bit before, how I assemble them in 2 pieces. You know, I assembled the doors and the bottom and then the top all in one piece. So I have 2 separate pieces to the pod to make it easier to manage when I'm painting them.
Oh, they just slide
you know, together? Yeah, because they just slide back together. And
yeah, that'd make
the
that
harness would be yeah. easy to do. Because, I mean, think about the harness is just metal, maybe some dry brushing and a wash, and then you do a glow effect. It wouldn't have been that much more difficult, I don't think. But I think for ease of transportation, for line of sight purposes even, you know, it's okay not to have them on. That's how I would do it personally. I mean, if they were my drop pods, I probably wouldn't.
There's a couple things. I didn't include them in mine either because it's only 5 seats or whatever. holds 10 Marines.
Yep. Kind of silly. Ain't it?
No.
Everybody brings them in combat squads anyways, one. And two, they're comfortable sitting on each other's laps. They're man enough to be all right with that.
They're just rugged. They're just like stone cold, just standing there as it's disappearing.
I believe it.
I thought a drop pod, it's those five things, but each one has a guy on the front and the back of it.
They're actually one sitting on each other. It's like butterfly style, like when you used to ride on the swing set. That's how they sit coming down the drop.
They're not sitting, they're standing.
I know, I'm just... It's, the whole thing's a joke.
Now it's bothering, I swear.
While you're going counting that, I'll let you know that I still don't... I don't care how many seats there are, they're not going in there.
It holds 10. A drop pod holds 10. They're standing up, back to back. Holds 10.
I honestly think they look cooler when the doors come down and you can see through them on the tabletop. I think
at least there are seats there. I mean, rhinos, who knows, like, the way that they have to Tetris themselves into those things, right?
There's
the seatbelt laws are really loose in the 41st millennium.
In the 41st millennium, yeah. It's anarchy. The Emperor protects.
What are you going to say about the drop pods?
Oh, we basically just, we covered it. They're just terrible to paint. And there's so many little fiddly bits on them, I guess, that you want to paint, and then you can make them look beautiful like you did, or you can make them look like transport vehicles like I did.
Or you could be that guy at ATC that had paper mache ones. So I saw that one.
No way. Are you serious?
I swear to you, I went to ATC and the dude had paper mache drop pods. In fairness, I did have to look twice to figure it out.
I've definitely seen the people making them out of plastic card. And I almost want to say, like, why would you go through that effort? Like, I know that maybe it's a money savings effort. Maybe it's just to say that you did. But for as affordable as they are to purchase, you know, I have a feeling that they're just as easy to assemble.
I mean, you know, I don't think $30 that you save, is it worth your sanity?
Well, a long time ago, there wasn't a drop pod model, so you had to get creative. So, I mean, depending on the age of those, that could have been the only option you had. And then once you put that effort into it, you don't want to just replace. I mean, I'm not advocating replacing it.
I agree.
Was in my area who he would run salamanders and drop pods, and his drop pods he cut out of foam core. Using a template he printed off from the internet, they were like about 66% the size of an actual drop pod, and it was just consisted of like several hexagons stacked on top of each other.
That's the old one, like back in the 90s or whatever. That was one of the options that people had for a drop pod.
Yeah, I'm not sure he was old enough to be playing 40K in the 90s.
Well, the internet never forgets. You know. I'm saying that was one of the real ones. He may have dug deep on the Wayback Machine and found it, but that was an option.
So he hit 88 miles per hour?
I guess so.
All right. I'll take your word for it, Paul.
Those are handed down from his father.
That could also
be great things about drop pods. One of the great things about drop pods, though, is that you can make them look really good with very little effort. I mean, it's gonna take some time. But
if you've got a secret, you let me know. I get you're right. I'm back on board. I was about to say, if you've got a secret for tips, then let's hear it. But yeah, you're right. Time is what you've got to put into them.
They do come through the atmosphere. Just put a lot of scorching on them, and you're good. You'll be fine.
That's a hard one. Like, because the drop pods. If you guys go to the Beyond the Brush Studios Facebook page or Instagram, you'll see
it's worth it. Go check it out. The ones we're talking about are very good.
The one that you got to check out is the Death Company Chaplain that I painted, because that's easily top three models I've ever painted. I don't pat myself on the back very much, but I'm very happy with how that dude turned out. He's a cool model, and it's such a fun model to paint.
While we're on the topic,
even if you don't play Blood Angels, you should get one just because it's fun to paint.
God, that guy looks good. While we're on the topic of drop pods, though, $1 million idea. If you can come up with a jig that I can build my drop pod in that all those dang doors and wall thingies are symmetrical and that thing will close correctly, I will give you at least...
Back you on Kickstarter.
Yeah, I will back you on Kickstarter.
Talking about like a drop pod dance. Can you make a jig for me, Chris, perform it at Warzone Atlanta?
So you
never scatter?
Yeah. That's like a rain dance?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Take 1d6 off of your scatter if you do this dance.
If you do the jig.
That's do the funny. Jig. I'll allow it.
I built the three that I did this past weekend. And I thought about doing this like in sub-assembly. And I was like, oh, man, no, I'm too lazy for that. It's just got to go together. because I knew I was going to have to quick paint them. So I'm like, I'm gonna open the doors and I'm going to prime the inside and the inside of the doors black. And then I'm going to shut the doors and I'm going to prime the outside gray. And that's what I did.
There you go.
There's.
I think that worked. That's what I think that's basically what I did was I just took, I had my, the gunmetal colored primer, sprayed the whole inside, closed the doors, and then primed the rest with the Dark Angels green, and then just went in and did some detail work.
Yep.
And that really, yeah, cut down a ton of time.
That's what I'm doing now for the Luna Wolves.
Yeah, that'll save you a ton of trouble.
Yeah, airbrushing some white, which is a tricky thing to do, and that's what I did. But I got it. Yeah, I've got a lot of practice with doing that right now, so airbrushing the white's not a big deal, but remember, white does cake up on you, or can cake up on you in the airbrush. And splutter.
You know, the
out.
Best part about what we did there, though, Paul, we didn't use a brush, so technically we went beyond the brush. You see what I did there?
I see what you did.
Oh, man, my knees are sore from slapping so hard.
Shut up, you.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. The finishing move segment today is going to be about smoke and fire. And the reason why that's interesting is that you paint it basically the opposite way you paint most glow effects. I mean, obviously, we'll talk more about the topic here in a few minutes, but that's what we're going to do after we come back.
Cool.
See you in a minute.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hob supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Hey everybody, we are back. I've got Chris Morgan and Adam Abramowitz.
What's up, guys?
Go Tribe.
And Ricky Addington.
Did you seriously just say that? Did you say that right now?
Dude, I lived in Cleveland for 8 years.
I don't even want to hear this.
When did you live anywhere close to Chicago?
I lived there for a week once.
Extended stay. So
you're on vacation.
I played 40K there once.
Wait, there. Yeah. I've been there.
2 weeks.
Like, thrice? I've been there thrice? That's enough.
I want to talk about the Custodes and Sisters of Silence in 40K. We got the data slates for them, the detachments for them from Games Workshop, specifically published, you know, just for this. And, you know, they don't stink.
They don't.
I think I know where you guys are going to go with this, but I really like the Sisters rules, and the models are pretty great, too. I love the pariah effect, as Chris would call them. I mean, I think they're fantastic. I love having psychic gnolls in the game. I think it's a great aspect. It's a great way to shut down invis, but they're also beasts in hand-to-hand. I mean, they do double duty. I think they're a great addition to just about any Imperial force.
One concern for them is delivery mechanism. And that's the one thing I feel like they need in order to make them that super scary thing that will balance out a lot of the psychic stuff that's in the game right now.
When I say they didn't stink, that was actually a sarcasm. I think they are phenomenal, including the Sisters.
I was actually talking with on Chris's note. I was talking with Andrew earlier today with some of the things that GW released, you know, kind of fluff wise and how to play Custodes in your 40K battles today. But I think that this is a big initiative for them to sell more Land Raiders. And I think we're going to see something somewhere where they can take transports. It's going to come out, I believe. If not, they can hop in turn one. So, I mean, yeah.
Well, we already know that Forge World is going to build support for these guys. So we're going to get more Codex-like entries.
Mm-hmm. As far as the Custodes are concerned, I mean, they've got the Deep Strike special rule. They come with that stock. So they have a delivery mechanism built in. I'm just thinking the Sisters specifically. But I think you're right, Paul. I think we're just seeing the very, very beginning of what these armies have in store for us.
So with the Sisters, we can go and talk about them. The base squad is 75 points. This is for 40K, not 30K. They've got the Bane of Psyker special rule. They cause fear. They are fearless, and they have the Psychic Abomination. So all this stuff, they've got the powers, on some level at least, of the Calexis Assassin. They even got Psychal Grenades.
I think they're great.
Yeah, for 15 points a model, so you can take a bunch of them, and still, even if you lose a few getting in there, their aura still extends from them. I mean, they're very strong. And if you take, you can't take them in a in a battle-forged army unless you take this Null Maiden task force. And it's got a special rule of when generating warp charges at the start of each of their psychic phases, your opponent adds one less dice to their warp charge pool for each unit from this formation after the first on the battlefield. So if you have three squads of sisters, then they are minus two dice to their warp charge pool.
That forces me as a psychic heavy Eldar player to absolutely add that third Farseer into my list. I have to do it. I rely on that third Farseer.
I think it's going
to
affect
14 dice down to 13. 12,
yeah, that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, not that big of a deal.
Now, if you got one librarian in there and all of a sudden you got no dice, then it's a problem.
I'm not talking about casting and getting powers off. I'm talking about getting the powers that I need for this army to make it in a tournament setting. I really need Fortune, and it's a plus if I've got Invis. If I've got Fortune and Invis, it's a lot easier for me to go after those strategically with my dice rolls at the beginning of the game, before the game starts rolling on the psychic charts, to get both of them. I can make the smart decisions.
Well, it's not going to affect that.
Well, no. But you're right. But it makes it a lot harder to get those two powers and maybe a couple Psy Shrieks off or whatever.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah, okay.
During the game.
I can agree with that. They've got the precision shot against Psykers. I mean, these guys are pretty good at shooting Psykers. I think they've got a great melee weapon, so I don't know why you'd want to necessarily go with the Bolters. They are swinging AP2 swords, plus one strength AP2 swords, puts them up to strength 4, but it gives them an AP2.
Initiative 5.
They're basing it 5, so that's a pretty big deal.
There's some really good stuff with that. Now, one of the things that I was a little bit kind of funnily confused on was why there are power daggers with the custodes.
Because you can give them a sword and a dagger, and they're getting an extra attack, bro.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, maybe that's just in case you fight Jayne Zarr and she takes away your halberd.
Or something. A little bit of Jayne Zarr.
I mean, she's got
insurance.
A 2-up anyways, but it's just one of those things I was like, but, huh. Okay.
Well, let me stay on the sisters though, since we're not going to bounce around before we close this out. Is that they you could take a flamer for 2 points. I can and the way this is structured also is that this is any model where we place their bolt guns with one of the following: Executioner, Great Blade, or Flamer. So you don't have to replace them all. You could pick and choose how you replace them to more tailor your army to what you think you're going to encounter in an event or even your buddy or whatever.
See, I love the idea of 85 points for 5 flamers and, you know, all the little things that they get, but it boils down to a delivery method. Like we were discussing, I don't want to put flamers on some models and then try to walk them across the table.
You do not want to do that. That is not going to be a good. But the points are kind of cheap, though. I mean, 2 points of flamer. Can't you just put them in the back and make sure they get there?
I guess get a big squad of them, put Drago in there, and teleport them there.
We could also go back to my original, one of my original crazy whack job ideas of a Fortress of Redemption with 3 escape hatches.
Oh, you know, that's not a bad idea. Okay, I like that idea. That's a better idea. Do that.
No. About that, guys. But
bunker is cheap, though. You can get an escape hatch on a bunker.
Do the bunker. Yeah.
I mean, and escape hatches not being what they once were, not being able to assault out of them with the repel the enemy special rule, just kind of takes the wind out of that. But, I mean, it's a good way to cover ground. I'll say that.
Yeah.
If you take a unit of, so stock units 5, you take a unit of, I mean, take an odd or even an 8 number, a unit of 8, expecting to lose 30 points, you're still going to get 4 or 5 models there, turn 2.
The downside is their toughness 3, so they can, you know, they're wounded more often than Space Marines, and they still only have a 3+ armor save, and they don't have a way to improve that from what I can see right here in these rules. But
it's like playing Eldar. You're basically playing Eldar without battle focus.
But having a whole unit of people that are fearless, that's the thing, they're fearless. So if you're just looking at, like, point for point, the Kalexus is, what is he, 160, 100, somewhere in that 160, 180 point range?
I know it's in the 150 ballpark.
Right, so that's, you're getting 10 sisters for the price of one of those. technically like probably 11 or 12 sisters for the price.
I mean, I'm taking sisters, but the only problem is you have to take three of them.
No,
you have to take three units.
No, no. 1 to 3. No, you, there is literally no downside to that formation. GW said, "Hey, okay, we're not going to hose you on this, guys." And there's no penalty for taking
anything that gave people the same benefit twice or anything like that. We learned our lesson.
Yeah, this formation is 1 to 3 units.
Okay.
Yeah, so these guys, I mean, obviously they're a tactical choice, right? If you depending on what you plan on facing over the course of the scope of a multi-round event, but the models look cool. I think they look cool with the bolters.
Yeah, they look awesome. The flamers look great. The bolters look great. Everything on those are a win. Now, if they just, you know, can do that for Sisters of Battle, so all the people foaming at the mouth for the past decade can, you know, calm down, we'll be in heaven.
I think Games Workshop knows exactly what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. I think that's what makes it hurt. That's why it hurts so bad, is they know what they're doing.
Now, the psychic abomination, all psychers, friend or foe within 12 inches of a model with this special rule. They've all got it. So think of the footprint of this psychic abomination if you've got them all spread out at max coherency. Ugh. I mean, sometimes it's only going to take one round for that to be an effect for you to kind of close the lid on your opponent. And they go so far as to say the psychic abomination special rule does not apply whilst the unit with this special rule is embarked in a transport or building. So that's why the escape hatch is very important for your trip, Fortress of Redemption escape hatch plan.
It could just really, like, now this overrides, this will override Tigerius, right? Tigerius, who he gets him on twos, right? He harnesses on a two up, right?
He doesn't harness on a two up. You're talking about when the Librarius Conclave.
Yeah, it's the Conclave, not Tigerius, that does that.
Yeah, they get a bonus to what they're. That's a good question. The things that gets a bonus.
It gets a bonus, but this says always on a six. Can only harness on a six, even if it would otherwise harness on another. So, Librarius Conclave is now harnessing on a six.
Yep.
So
Conclave obsolete.
It even says even if the unit would otherwise harness warp charges on another result. So it's very even like the Farseers and the Seer Council that harness on a 3+. You know, this is it. Basically says like six. You're on a six, even if you would get another result.
Golly, that is. Like, see, me, I play knights, so big whoop. Okay, psychic abomination, good on you.
And you love a bunch of sisters with bolters.
Yeah, I'll step on you all day. But, I mean, for these guys, you know, Jet Seer Council and Librarius Conclave lists and all this stuff, and all of a sudden your 75 points are the scariest thing on the table to one of these armies.
Yeah, I will say the Collexus stands up a lot better against fire than these guys do, because remember, we only hit the Collexus on a six. He's got an invulnerable save, and you know, and it could be a better cover save, maybe. I don't know. But
you don't need line of sight, though, Paul. Just hide them behind some tanks.
No, you don't. You don't. Yeah. Yep.
Keep them out of line of sight, and you got a pretty cool unit there.
So similar to the way that they did the formation for the Sisters of Silence, we've got a Golden Legion task force. And this is pretty neat. It's 1 to 3 custodian guard squads. And then whilst two units from this formation are on the battlefield, all models in this formation have a 6+ invulnerable save. While three units from this formation are on the battlefield, all models in the formation have a 5+ invulnerable save.
Okay, can we just acknowledge, or just let's say it this way. Who wasn't going to take at least two units of these anyway? Because look at them.
They are beautiful.
They are beautiful. They do a lot. And so far as a points cost are concerned, I think they're well worth it.
They're everything a Terminator squad should be.
Yep. Well, weren't the first to say it, won't be the last.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not sure this formation's benefit is really all that awesome, considering they can take the storm shields, but it does allow you to have an invulnerable save if you keep your glaive.
Well, clearly it's going to, it depends on how you set your guys up. You know, I mean, if all your guys are going to have storm shields anyway, then big whoop, who cares? You know, you don't even care about this formation.
I can tell you some of those storm shields and power weapons are going to make their way into some other armies for me. Going to be some serious action.
No, sorry, I couldn't imagine.
Go ahead, Ricky. I didn't mean to cut you off.
But yes, you know, I mean, I mean, I used to be a Deathwing player, so these guys are like right up my alley as far as that just super elite force going in. And yeah, that formation is looking pretty good to me, because, you know, I'm not going to put I'm not going to put storm shells on every single model. It's just, you know, you want the offensive ability that some of these other things are going to come with. You know, if you can put what out of five guys, two storm shields and have more attacks out of the other guys, that's probably the route I'm going.
Think of this. I mean, say you're fighting a demon prince or a giant bloodthirster or a wraith knight swinging D or whatever, you know, with the guardian spear, you get the block rule. We talked about this before when it was just on the one death watch guy, but this is on a squad of dudes. I mean, you could set up a situation to where you've got a couple guys with storm shields and three guys with the guardian spear. And then what's a guy swinging with five attacks hitting on threes? How many hits is going to get? He's going to hit three, four times. And then you mm-hmm. block two or three of them. Then you're reducing the saves you have to take. You know, so they're killing giant models.
Yeah. I love the idea of blocking a Wraith Knight's D with a stinking little spear. I love it.
Faith Member allows you to do that.
Is epic as it gets. See, I am not talking trash about this at all. I legitimately love it.
I'm going to block a Wraith Knight with this.
I'm doing it. Yeah, I will.
And someone's going to be like, what?
It just happened.
The standard for this unit is 30 points. It's the Custodes Vexilla. Vexia. Vexilla. I'm going to get all the pronunciations for all the areas.
Yeah, he's moving in before I can strike. You see that? That's preparedness.
Run down the list. Hurry.
It's like a company standard. So what it does is that... friendly units from the armies of the Imperium. That's a lot of armies, people. Within 12 inches of the bearer, had the fearless special rule. In addition, all friendly models from the armies of the Imperium, again, a ton of models in the same unit as the bearer. I guess yeah. So anyway, have +1 attack while the bearer is alive. So a big fearless bubble to all your ally forces, and then +1 attack to all your special characters that have loaded up in that unit.
It's fun.
I smell a Death Star. Star
blobs.
I have no objection to this.
and it looks cool.
It does look cool. Man, their power swords just looks... I can't get over how cool those power swords look.
I think I'm going to do a giant 10-man unit of Death Company with Dante and a chaplain or two and maybe a couple maybe a librarian or a librarius conclave and then... the custodes, just beefy beast mode.
Yeah.
Can the custodes join another unit? Like, could they join a Death Company unit?
No, they're a unit, so can join each other.
They aren't independent characters, but they are all characters.
I didn't think about them being characters. They're all characters. That means we can look out, sir, to the storm shields.
Yes.
Yep.
On a four plus, but still.
Hey, that's a 50-50 shot, so I'll take it.
Yeah.
Or you can take the challenge with one of those guys.
Yep.
And then block their attack.
Yep.
I need, how many of these can I put in an 1850 list, and how much gold spray paint can I get in 2 weeks?
Well, they're 260 points for the Guardian Squad, and then 50 points for each additional custode.
Yeah, and you're going to take at least, what, two storm shields.
So. Well, that's a bargain. That's 25 points per wound.
You got to think, let's see here, 260 is what, or 265, I think is what my normal Deathwing army, or like, a Deathwing Terminator squad.
Okay, Ricky, this is the most sincere advice I'm ever going to give you. Throw that Deathwing in the trash.
No. I understand. I'm saying, so 260, 265 is for like a fully kitted out Terminator squad. You know what I'm saying? And then these are coming in at 260. So base, they're a million times better than a Deathwing Terminator squad. Base. So just because they're toughness 5, I mean, we're overlooking that right there. Toughness 5. Which is what Terminator should be. And then, I mean, they're
Eternal Warrior, Adamantium Will.
Two wounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's where a lot of Terminators fail, is that you hit them with the melt gun, they fail that save.
Exactly.
And they just picked up, you know. But these guys are not getting picked up from a melt gun shot.
Exactly.
And it takes at least two melt gun shots to put them down.
This is everything you want in 2-up save.
But let's say you join a Sanguinary High Priest to them, then they've got Feel No Pain.
Well, we all knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And we all know that Paul is going to put a bike on that priest.
Or you get even a Space Wolf not a rune priest, the Wolf Priest, to give him the hatred rule and healing bombs.
Zealot. Yeah. I mean, Zealot in that unit would be bonkers. There's no way that I'm not figuring out a way to make that happen.
Then you put an IG priest in there, then they're rerolling their armor saves.
Now, you're, man, now, there's someone out there right now, Paul. There's someone out there right now that's shaking their head. It's just like, Paul, quit trying to ruin my game.
I think it's perfectly reasonable that that an IG priest, a sanguinary high priest, a wolf priest, and a bunch of custodes walk into a bar.
That sounds like the worst joke ever. That's almost Ricky level bad.
Hurtful. Your words hurt people, Chris. Okay, that hurts. You know, would it make you feel better if it was a Sisters of Battle priest? Would that be cooler?
He can auto pass, take that war gear.
Boom, son.
So then you get hit and run from Saint Celestine.
Yep. And she's got a jump pack, so
am I out of points yet? Am I like
I think we stopped worrying about points like 5 minutes ago on that.
Okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm gonna do Sisters of Silence, Sisters of Battle, Custodes.
Yes.
I'm gonna challenge you to that, Paul.
No,
he's gonna put a Blood Angel in there. He can't not do it.
Yeah. Oh, I am. It's already been broadened.
You better bring it.
I can't. The librarius just caught fire. Hold on, guys. I'll be right back.
It's a good thing he wasn't on the show. Wait, Chris, you weren't on the show when we were talking about the putting the Blood Angels in with the... Or what was it? The Inquisitor in with Gene Slayer cults?
I wasn't on that show. And for whatever reason, Paul thought that he could justify that easier than an Ordo Malleus Inquisitor in the Blood Angels.
Yeah,
because Blood Angels don't hang out with Inquisitors.
Oh, when the Ordo Malleus has a bloodthirster problem, who do they call?
Well, they should call the Blood Angels. Should.
They do. Remember, they called the Sanguinary Guard and Dante in to fight Kabanda. You remember that?
I think you're right about that.
Yep, it happened. So shut your face.
I'm sure. For all the listeners out there, I just want to apologize for triggering Chris Morgan. And
you don't apologize at all. You love it.
I love it.
God, I'm looking at this custo model with his power sword. I'm just thinking that's gotta make that happen.
I don't even care. God, let's be honest. If those guys had the stat line of an Imperial Guardsman with all that crap and still cost that, I would still find a way to put them in an army. Like that. Those models are too good not to
Their backs look kind of like a jump pack, so maybe we're going to get jump infantry.
Oh, you're wishlisting now.
Can you imagine that?
I'm just saying, look in the background of that picture. That is a Custodian Contemptor Dreadnought.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah, a full line. I fully suspect a full line. I mean, but, you know, whatever, Games Workshop is killing it. They released this stuff, this beautiful stuff. They know people want them. Then we get 40K rules. Then we get lined up with the teaser that we're getting the tank, the Legion Grav tank or whatever. I mean, just their community team is killing it. This is, can't give enough praise to those guys.
It's like they're twisting the knife, but we like it. It's so insane. And it's, you know, every time I talk to my GW rep, you know, when we put in our order and everything, it's just, we go on we get to talking, a few minutes just about how much difference there is from what three, four years ago, GW to today, and just how night and day it is with their community involvement, their online presence, everything. It's just, it's the best time in the world to be in this hobby, and I'm having a blast. I'm broke, but I'm having a blast.
Yeah. I need five more custodes. That's what I need.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll be combing the internet.
Didn't you just buy a Warlord Titan or something like that?
Well, that was last year. I've just now gotten around to putting it together. I got it at Adepticon.
No, it was this year. I remember.
This year's Adepticon. Yeah.
You were so conflicted.
Oh gosh. Yeah, man. Boy, was my credit card conflicted too, because they locked that thing down. When you try to buy a Warlord Titan 12 hours away from home, guess what? Your bank is going to shut your card off. You all need to know that. Yeah, I got the two volcano cannons put together the other day, and I've been running around the house with them like they're little ray guns. And, I mean, they're literally the size of like a Han Solo's blaster. I mean, they're insane. The model's insane. It is... What is it? Ferris Bueller said, "If you have the means, I highly recommend you pick one up."
And you seem to be some question about which head you wanted to attach to that thing.
Oh God!
And
it better
be the one that I smuggled back from Nottingham for you.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. Yeah, that it is. It's like the hardest decision I think I've ever made is which one of the.
It's
like,
a tough choice.
I got all three of them out, cut them all off the sprue, and just kind of fit them together. And that is a testament to how good this model is that those heads you can just fit together and they will hold together. I mean, they are nice. Anyway, I had all three of them sitting there. And I had the whole family voting on it. So I had a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, and my wife who could give a crap about the head of a Warlord Titan. We've reached no consensus. I took it to the internet, and you all were virtually no help. And it is literally coming down to it's either the Mars Alpha or Beta. The Lucius head is out. That thing is terrible looking. We didn't even talk about Custode's Horus Heresy rules, Paul, and the fact that they're a million times better.
We'll catch that up next show. Let's go ahead and get into the finishing move segment.
Okay, fine.
This finishing move segment brought to us by GameAddEU. These guys, you know, we talked about them a bunch on the show so far, but they have quality products. I'm going to see some of their terrain on the tables at Warzone Atlanta in the pictures you're going to see me taking of the games we have here at the place. And then their game mats. I mean, it's really like a one-stop shop to get your table ready for some really interesting dynamic games. You know, I mentioned before that I have the industrial scenery, and even if you stack two of those shipping containers on top of each other, you got some beautiful line of sight terrain. I think the only thing, if you were to get their solution, the Game Mat EU solution all together, talking about the mat and with the terrain, the only thing you're going to be missing from that is maybe some area terrain, and the area terrain pieces are pretty easy to fabricate yourself.
I mean, I saw the. For the first time, I actually got a chance to really look at it this weekend. My wife was out of town. The kid was napping. I was having my third cup of coffee on Saturday morning. And I'm like, I'm going to check this stuff out. It is, I mean, it's really well crafted. And you can buy it pre-painted, which for only like $13 more.
That's an
insane value.
Yeah, because when I was looking at that, I was like, oh, pre-painted, this program costs an arm and a leg. You're right. It's like... $20 and it's painted, so you know, why would you not?
It painted well too. I mean, what you see in the picture is what you'd expect to get. I mean, that's what I have. It came pretty much exactly like the picture says it is, and I mean, I think it's worth it. The big line of sight blocking pieces, about the only thing you're going to be really missing in a for like a overall dynamic game is a few area terrain pieces that you might want to include. You might not. Maybe you just call the mat. Maybe areas on the mat that you have are the area terrain, because that stuff is partitioned off pretty well to where you could be just say this area, this yard or whatever is the area terrain. But I noticed when I was dropping some thud guns on people, they probably would have appreciated a little bit better, maybe more places to hide with a piece of area terrain.
What I would like to see them add to the line, and this isn't a critique so much as a suggestion, is some terrain with more levels. You know, I like in a 40 game terrain, I like to play vertically as much as I like to play horizontally. So I think it would be cool to see some, maybe two or three story buildings or stackable.
Yeah, check out the Gothic ruins. They have a Gothic ruin section that is just that. It's a few leveled buildings. I really like what they're doing with their product and being that kind of one-stop place for people that need that solution. Because I'll be honest, Games Workshop makes some fabulous terrain. Other people make some fabulous terrain. And you've heard us even talk about it. Like we love some of the other people we've had on the show talk about their terrain. But being able to just get some stuff that's ready to take out of the box and put on the table sometimes has its own value associated with it.
Well, it's great for a tournament organizer too. I mean, I've got, what do we have? We've got 12 tables in my shop. We've only got, I think, 8 of them right now with terrain on them. And so I'm really looking at just calling these guys up and seeing if I can't get 4 tables of terrain. And because I don't have time to do that much terrain. So it's really good. The quality of this of their stuff is great. Their mats are great. The Mars mat looks like, you know, a straight up picture of Mars. And then, oh, hey, I pay $130 and now I've got all this terrain to go on that mat as well. It's a one-stop shop, no hassle, no fuss. You're out the door with a, you know, a full table of terrain. It's good.
So Fire and Smoke. The reason I want to bring this up, it's not on a ton of miniatures, but there's sometimes, you know, you'll see a wizard with like a fire in their hand, or maybe even a demon has, you know, glowing radiant warp energy on them. And so maybe this isn't for the warp energy stuff, because that's magical and mystical and you can do it however you want. But if you're trying to paint a fire effect that is trailing out to smoke, or just a smoke effect, you paint it in a really different way than you would paint a glowing effect in the lenses or like a plasma weapon like we've talked about before.
Just reverse everything and you're done.
So I think the simple technique, and if you're doing fire, let's just say, I think let's start with that, is that a good way to start is to base coat it in yellow or even just plain white and work up with glazes. We talked about glazes a bit on, I think, the last show. You work in some yellow glazes and some orange over top of yellow and then some reds on top towards the very end, and all of a sudden you've got fire. I mean, that's it's as easy as that. And if you want to dry brush over it, you can if you think it's necessary. You know, usually glazes, in my opinion, and Ricky's a fantastic painter as well, you know, he might be able to attest to this, dry brushing over top of glazes isn't always necessary because it ruins that fluid.
Yeah, it doesn't look as smooth. You're
kind of going
The transitions get right. A little messed up. One of the first things I would say for anybody trying to do fire before even you get your glazes out is just look at a fire, find pictures of fire on the internet, and look at the order in which the colors go from center to the outside. Because so often you'll see someone with fire and you think, oh, well, that looks a little off. And it's because the colors look inverted.
The instinct is to do like you're doing the glow effect, where it's the darker colors at the bottom and you come up to the lighter colors. But in realistic fire, it's the opposite.
You can Absolutely. Even look at different colors of fire, because depending on what you're burning, you can change the color of the flame. And if you're looking to not do just straight red fire, that can provide you with a good visual sort of reference that helps you pick the kind of fire that you want to do and the colors you need to choose to pull that off.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what colors you use. I want my fire to be purple. Okay, that's great. Just make sure you understand that, you know, the source is going to be hotter and therefore a brighter color. And then as it tapers out to the smoke, it's going to be cooling and it's going to start to darken into a blacky, you know, a black kind of ashy or like a soot, or into that white.
You could even go up cloud. To brown if you plan on it smoking out. Like there could be a color transition of, you know, red to orange to yellow to white to brown.
Yeah.
In a fade with the mediums or just with your brush. You know, remember it's going to be darker at the top.
So my secret recipe, if you're using an airbrush, or even if you're not using an airbrush, yellow to even like a golden yellow, orange to red. From red, you might even want to work in a purple before going to black, or I like to use a charred brown. Vallejo's charred brown is easily one of my top 10 most used colors on my desk. I always have it nearby because there's so much you can do with it, and it blends so well over red and so well into black. Pick some up.
I like that. And this would be for, like, there's a bunch of brazers out there. Like, there's a ton in Age of Sigmar. Like, I've painted some, and I did it the wrong way. I for the Skaven brazers that are linking fire, I did it the magical, wispy, glowy lens way. But sometimes that looks good. I mean, you got to go with what you would look at. It really depends on what you're going for. Are you going for a realistic look? Are you going for an unrealistic look? And that's what you have to decide.
Well, speaking of unrealistic, I think we even brought it up on the show in the past, but if you want to go for like a ghostly smoke, you know, Ricky and I were talking before the show about a great way to achieve a ghost effect. Again, as Paul calls it, it's like it's pro painted in a bottle, nylock oxide. Vallejo makes a very similar paint called Verdigris. And, you know, it's supposed to be a patina effect, but it works so well with smokes and ghostly colors. All you have to do is paint it over white. You can water it down, paint it over, blend it back. What I like to do is base something white. You know, talk about like the Dark Angel's Chaplain that I recently did, how it has the smoke coming out of the lantern. You know, I base that white. I put a wash of it, of the nylock oxide on time, then just airbrushed a couple dabs of white back over top to blend it back in. And it looks amazing. And it's literally a three-step process. And that's best painted it. Best painted, you know, technique right there that takes three steps and anybody can do it.
I want to tell you how good nylock oxide is. I literally primed my son's undead army here for Age of Sigmar white, and then mixed nylock oxide and Lamian medium, and then just poured it over it, just slathered it on. As soon as it dried, the Ghostbusters kicked in my door and they used their proton packs, and now I no longer have an undead army. It just vanished. It looked that good.
Are you for real?
That really happened? That happened.
Sounds like it's for real.
But seriously.
Did you get Bill Murray's autograph?
You know it. Seriously, though, like that.
They weren't playing the new song, were they?
No, no. Hey, however, I will say that that new movie was underrated because I laughed my butt off at that. But that's all I'm going to say. It's great. Like, if you don't have nylic oxide, you're doing yourself a disservice. Have that. Put that in your toolkit.
There are several paint colors that I think everyone should have. I'll try to compile this from you guys and put it in the subject or the body of the post for this. Just things that live on our work benches.
You got to include Vallejo Black Metallic because that's just pure gold.
All right.
But not gold.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. I mean, I think that we've covered a bunch on the topic. I mean, I think that's with the painting of the smoke and fire. Remember, if you want to be realistic, it's lighter. But you would just flip it over, flip the colors that you would normally use for the glow or whatever glow you're going for over. If you're going for unnatural fire,
do whatever you want.
Do however the heck you want.
Basically, yeah. Whatever you want. Yeah. But it's worth investing two or three colors in it, or doing something like these washes that we're talking about, because you could get the same effect with a light base color going over with almost any color wash.
So, hey, Paul, before we wrap up, I got a quick question, though. You know how some fires, you know, the very center of the flame will have a blue glow. Is that something that you think that you could pull off on some of these models?
I don't think I could.
You probably could, Adam.
Do you have an
challenge
idea how to
accept it?
Yeah.
You know what? It's without an airbrush, I have a hard time figuring out how to do it. I think you'd have to do the blue last, but
I don't think it would look right.
Use an airbrush personally for something like that.
I think it would definitely depend on the fire, because here's the thing: if you paint that on there, because when you paint that, if you paint the like a, just a little tiny blue, and you're looking at it from the front, that's fine. But as soon as you turn the model kind of to the side, and then it looks like it's all to the side, I don't think it would look right because you. With the way the fire and the smoke is modeled, like it's billowing out, I think that would be very difficult thing to pull off, but I definitely want to see how you do it.
I think I agree with you. I don't play with a lot of models that have smoke on them, so until I get into Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, so I was going to say, pick up any Age of Sigmar model and you'll paint some flames.
Yeah.
The Silver Tower box set has people that are actually on fire.
Boom, there's all the practice you need.
Yeah. It's like that whole Trogdor thing where the peasants are on fire, that's how you know they're peasants. That's how you know that Age of Sigmar model is an Age of Sigmar model, because he's on fire.
He's on fire.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with me tonight, and you guys listening in your cars or at work or whatever. I will try to include that list of must-have paints and products in this in the main body of the post. So if you don't normally check it out, that would be a reason to check it out. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, you guys have a good night.
Not a night.
I see dead people.